Srimad Bhagavatam, but I've been asked to talk about Prabhupada, so I'll be able to fit that in. So just the translation and purport then. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text Number 7. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear King, Lord Nrsingadev resides in the tract of land known as Harivasa, in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I shall describe to you how Prahlad Maharaj caused the Lord to assume the form of Nrsingadev. Prahlad Maharaj, the topmost devotee of the Lord, is a reservoir of all good qualities of great personalities. His character and activities have delivered all the fallen members of his demonic family. Lord Nrsinga is very dear to this exalted personality. Thus, Prahlad Maharaj, along with his servants and all the denizens of Harivasa, worships Lord Nrsingadev by chanting the following mantra." Well, we'll get to that. Purport. Jayadev Goswami's 10 prayers worshiping the incarnations of Lord Krishna, Keshava, contain his name in every stanza. For example, Keshava, Drita, Narahari Rupa, Jaya Jagadisha Hari. Keshava, Drita, Minashata, Jaya Jagadisha Hari. And Keshava, Drita, Vamana Rupa, Jaya Jagadisha Hari. The word Jagadisha refers to the proprietor of all the universe. His original form is the two-handed form of Lord Nrsinga, standing with a flute in his hand and engaged in tending the cows, as stated in Brahma Samhita. Chintamani Prakara Sadmanasel Kalpabrika Lakshmi Sestu Surabhi Rabi Palyantam Lakshmi Sahasa Sata Sata Sambrahma Sevyamanam Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires in abodes built with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of purpose trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. From this verse, we learn that Govinda, or Krishna, is the Adi Purush, the original person. The Lord has innumerable incarnations, exactly like the innumerable waves of a flowing river. But the original form is Krishna, or Keshava. Sukadeva Goswami refers to Nrsingadev because of Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was put into great distress by his powerful father, the demon Hiranyakashipu. Apparently helpless before him, Prahlad Maharaj called on the Lord, who immediately assumed the gigantic form of Nrsingadev, half lion and half man, to kill the gigantic demon. Although Krishna is the original person, one without a second, he assumes different forms just to satisfy his devotees or to execute a specific purpose. Therefore, Jayadev Goswami always repeats the name of Keshava, the original personality of Godhead, in his prayers describing the Lord's different incarnations for different purposes. So, here, Prahlad Maharaj, a young boy, was being harassed by his demonic father, Hiranyakashipu. Now you can think what this is like. Just an innocent helpless child and a very demonic father, always telling him there is no Lord and trying to kill him even, trying to kill him in so many ways. And so, as you know, he, Hiranyakashipu, had gained many tapastic powers, and so he was able to ask for boons for immortality, that I cannot be killed by any man-made weapon. I cannot be killed day or night, etc., etc. You know the story. So, all the incarnations of the Lord comes to us and comes to Prahlad Maharaj when we need him. Sri Sri Radha Krishna is there for us. We will be tested in life. Sometimes we will be tested, but not too much, because the Lord will always help us. And according to what is needed. In this case, it was needed not a man or an animal, but half. It was like a transcendental loophole to these boons. And it was in the middle of the day and night, and not inside, not outside. Everything kept to these boons, but transcendentally, the Lord still was able to trick the demon and protect his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. It is like also Mirabai. Her husband was saying, do not carry on this devotional service. It is a waste of time. So much in her heart was Radha and Krishna that she was able to transcend all the tests of the laws of duality that we find on this planet. Laws of duality testing us. Chanchala, sometimes Krishna conscious and sometimes not. Sometimes Krishna conscious, sometimes not. So, Prahlad was so much filled with Krishna consciousness that he was able to transcend thinking about himself being harassed, not just subtly, but being harassed overtly all the time by his demonic father, not even somebody he didn't even know, his father, what to do. So he thought of the Lord, and the Lord came to help him in this special way. Now all the incarnations, Kesava Drita Nara Hari Rupa, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, came for what was needed. Sometimes the Lord came like Varaha, because that was the nature of what was going on here at the time. So the Lord may come to us in different ways. And it is a process of within and without. If we are receiving or asking to be connected to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, if we are asking for this, then this will come inside of us, in our hearts, and help us to transcend all of the pitfalls that may test us in our Krishna consciousness. This earth planet is a very good platform to become Krishna conscious. It's not too pleasurable, but not too unpleasurable. If we were in the heavenly planets, it would be so heavenly and pleasurable that we might forget these things. And if we're in the hellish planets, it's so hellish that we're always struggling, always surviving, and we also forget the Lord in our heart. Now, I've been asked to talk about Prabhupada this morning, and it is not difficult to always think of some purport of Prabhupada in relationship to the verse. So, this reminds me, now a few people here. Last time I was here, there was no room for people. It was filled up all the way. But this is what it was like when we first started out. 9, 10 people staying back. Now, I remember the Akash Ganga, the Milky Way apartments. We were trying to get these on, what is it, Nepenthe Road? Is it still called that? So everybody else went to the Kumbh Mela with Prabhupada. Everybody in India. And myself and Rishi Kumar were given the duty to go and purchase, to see if we could get this apartment building, apartment in the Akash Ganga apartments. Everybody went on the train with Prabhupada, the Kumbh Mela, a very special gathering. Yet, somebody had to stay. And in a sense, even though it is like if you ever went to school or college and they stayed during the semester break, everybody leaves and you're left all alone. But you had studying to do or you had something to do. And even though you might have felt, oh, there goes everybody, my whole family is leaving, still it is very special because Prabhupada has asked me to carry on this duty for him. And this is special. You're staying here because you've already shown that you're reliable and responsible and able to represent Prabhupada. Prabhupada always Krishna conscious. He never deviated. Like I said, sometimes chanchala, Krishna conscious, not Krishna conscious. No one's looking, so I can do this. Someone's looking, so I'll pretend this. Whatever people go through in their devotional services. I mean, we're humans trying the best we can. And the way we do this is with each other, to not judge us and to help us along. And that's what you're doing. You're staying here, keeping this wonderful mandir open while everybody's out on the yatra, chanting and dancing. And that's much easier. But Prabhupada also did this. Like I say, he never deviated. There was a man, Mr. Lalan, near here. We were staying with him in Bombay. Maybe it was when we first started. Maybe there was 5 or 6 disciples with Prabhupada. His usual assistants were not there. It was one of these days when Prabhupada went there as a new place to stay, and there was only 3 or 4 of us, and I was asked to become Prabhupada's servant for the day. And I was always his servant, but usually he would send me out to do things like this, or get Akash Ganga or whatever. But this was a chance that I would be his direct bodily servant. And I always loved this. He didn't ask me very much. Maybe I massaged him twice. He would say, you should go out and preach. Anybody could rub oils, he said. He said it in such a way that he wasn't important. He said anybody could rub oils, referring to the massage. It's not so true. You needed to be strong to massage Prabhupada. Anybody couldn't rub oils, but he said that. Because you really, he would say, harder, harder, and it would be for about an hour, at least. And people would be sweating, big, strong, ex-military devotees, full of muscles, Prabhupada, and he would be harder, harder. But you see, it was nice because Prabhupada would do different things at different times of the day. And during the massage, if I was there, he would talk about the history of the world. He told me about the Home Rule, how the British administrators were paid back in England because they started to fall in love with India. This is what happens. You are here. You don't know necessarily, but India, it is my mother country, I always tell, because it is soft and sweet and relaxed. The West is somewhat violent. So, here, it was very nice. And Prabhupada would tell how the British fell in love with India, Clive, and started to give money back into the economy of India because they fell in love. There was an old proverb, any enemy, even your enemy, should be given a straw mat and a glass of water. Even your enemy. And this is what happened in India. India, the people are so wonderful in general, not everyone, but in general, that they turn their enemies into friends. So, Prabhupada was living nearby, and here was a chance for me to be his personal servant. And I was rubbing oils. And it was wonderful because he, during the massage, would tell me about various aspects of history, as I say. Sometimes he would talk about Mahatma Gandhi. Sometimes he would talk about some nuance of history, like I was talking about the home rule. During morning walks, Prabhupada would instruct me about nature. He would always talk about nature as being a very high manifestation of Krishna consciousness. There is no fooling in nature. There is no artificiality. But Prabhupada would see special things in nature. One time, there was a very shy devotee in San Francisco. He has left the planet, but his name was Upendra. And the thing is, Prabhupada, as I say, was always Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious. So we would always be watching Prabhupada. What is Prabhupada doing? What is Swamiji doing? How is he acting? And he always seemed to do everything perfectly. When he'd eat, it was like graceful. And when he'd drink, it was graceful. And he walked gracefully. And he did everything gracefully. But the nice thing about it is that you'd never know what he was going to do. And he'd always be encouraging us. Just like now we have the new project of the restaurant. So there'd always be some hope, something to look forward to. He's always finding our talent. Oh, Gurudas Ji, you can photograph? Photograph. Someone can do calligraphy, writing, do that. He would find our talent out. And so, that was exciting. But he also was exciting in the fact that we never knew what he was going to do. So here we are, and we're near a tree in San Francisco, walking around a lake. And he stops. We're walking, and everybody stops. And with his cane, he points to the bird droppings on the ground, bird feces. So I'm thinking, what is Prabhupada doing now, pointing to bird feces on the ground? Prabhupada makes anything transcendental. So, he says to all of us, what is the meaning of these bird droppings? And none of us knew. And he especially turned to Upendra and he said, Upendra, Prabhu, what is the meaning of these bird droppings? And Upendra turned red because he was a very shy, a very nice young man. And some people would just say, I don't know. But he started blushing because Prabhupada turned to him directly and said, what is the meaning of these bird droppings? Upendra said, I don't know. But then he regained his composure and he said, well, the positioning of the bird droppings is meaning something for the future, because there's a lot of theories going on at this time in the United States. It was the 1960s, and he was thinking it had something to do like people who read tea in cups. And he was saying it's the positioning of the bird droppings that says this. And Prabhupada said, no, 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 what is the meaning? And Upendra said, I don't know. And I said, I don't know. So then Prabhupada said, scientifically, not just poetically, but scientifically, Prabhupada had counted the bird droppings. There was at least 14 bird droppings there. So Prabhupada said, you see, this bard, he pronounced it bard, this bard, like Bengali, this bard has lived here for 2 weeks. Prabhupada sees things we don't see. We just walk on. Prabhupada sees all living entities. This famous story of the duck I tell 100 times is that Prabhupada saw when he was walking, they said, get out of the way, ducks. This great Swami is walking here. And Prabhupada said, as you're thinking they are disturbing us, they are thinking we are disturbing them. And he was able to see into the heart of the ducks. Well, he saw these birds and he said, they have lived here for 2 weeks. Then we walked on. And he said, see, even the birds are attached to their apartments. And he laughed. So he's always teaching us. Seemingly things that are contradictory are transcendental in Prabhupada's way. On another morning walk, he asked us, how do you know Krishna is God? How do you know Krishna is God? So I said, because you told us. Simple. Because he's God conscious. That was good enough for me. Because he never deviated, it was good enough for me. Because he was always chanting and always singing and always encouraging. And I'm getting to the story about Mr. Lalan. I have not forgotten Mr. Lalan. This is the purpose of this all. This will come soon. So, how do you know Krishna is God? Because you have told us. No, no. They will say, I am just an old man. Some people might say that. How does he know? You know, how does he represent God? They can say that. So, somebody else said something, and Prabhupada said, no, no, no. And then, no one knew. So Prabhupada said, we know that Krishna is God because it's in the Bhagavad Gita. And it states in the scripture that Krishna is God. Yeah. But Prabhupada said, no, you may say that, but someone could say, but this is just a book, and there's other books that say this. So how do you know about God? And Prabhupada said, because you feel the ecstasy. Now, every act you do for Krishna is like an extension of Prabhupada. That's how he lives with us. You staying here, like when it first started, a few people, building a family, every act you do that's Krishna conscious represents and keeps Prabhupada's message alive. And it goes in our own hearts and keeps us going. Every act that we do that's Krishna conscious, that we know is Krishna conscious. Every time we say with sincerity the names of Radha and Krishna and Rama is a representation of Prabhupada, and it keeps us going. And it's eternal. It's like it's always going on. There's no ending and no beginning. And so Prabhupada said, you know Krishna's God because you feel the ecstasy inside. And he said, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. He sometimes would do British, because he went to Scottish Church's College. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. So, oh yes, because I feel ecstasy, that's a good, I mean, because people may contend a book or a man or this or that, but no one can say, I don't feel this ecstasy. Just like our Dharmadhar yesterday, he said that I don't want to go to visit my cousin in Fresno. Everything I have is here, he said. Everything I have is here. He feels the ecstasy. He feels needed. And everything is provided for here. Plus, a new project. Now we have the restaurant, and people are coming, and it's being done so nicely and professionally and everything like that. Something to hope for. You feel the ecstasy. Oh, this person in the restaurant just became a little more Krishna conscious. Now I see them showing up in the temple. Before, they never came. Now the Jains are coming. Whatever. All this ecstasy that keeps us going. So I thought, oh, this is wonderful. Prabhupada has given this very nice proof that no one can deny. So then years later in Philadelphia, we're on a morning walk, and Prabhupada says, he stops, and everybody has to stop. And some of the people bumped into one another. Prabhupada stopped, and it was like that, because everybody wanted to get close to Prabhupada. Everybody was trying to get close to Prabhupada on the walk. Now, I didn't have to do it because Prabhupada gave me so much time. So much time and attention that I didn't have to fight my god brothers to be close to him on the morning walk, or god sisters. So Prabhupada says, how do we know Krishna's God? Oh, I know this one. I don't say anything. I want to give everybody a chance to say what they want. So somebody says, because you say so, Prabhupada. He says, no, they will just say, I am an old man speaking. No one knows. So I say, because you feel the ecstasy inside. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. And Prabhupada said, no, it's because the Bhagavad Gita says so. Now, they're both right. They're both transcendental. The Prabhupada told me so many times that things depend on time, circumstance, and place. So this time, it was the Bhagavad Gita that said so. So this is how Prabhupada is. That's so exciting all the time. You never knew what was going on. And he was always teaching us. Even that things may have its place at different times. So here we are, not too far from here, Mr. Lalonde's house. And I'm massaging Prabhupada, and I'm bringing him a prasadam. And I decided to sleep by his door, just on the doorstep, in case he needed anything. He would have a bell, and he would ring it. So I remember it was after evening prasadam, and I was there, and Prabhupada was in the room, and I thought, I think I'll see what Prabhupada's doing. First I thought it was in case he needed anything, but it was really more curious. He is a transcendental soul. I think I will peek through the keyhole and see what is my spiritual master doing? So I peeked through the keyhole, and Prabhupada was writing furiously. He was writing. No one was there. And he was totally engaged in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes he would take a break, and someone had brought some Bombay chebda. Is that how you pronounce it? Chebda? It's savories and everything, and he liked it very much. And even, no one was there, he ate it so gracefully. He would let the bag unwind, and then he would take some and throw it in his mouth without touching. When we were in San Francisco, we had a game. We would try to eat without touching our lips, because he was teaching us how to be clean in so many ways. You know, before, when we were cooking, one of the things is you have to taste it. How can you cook without tasting it while it's going on? So here he's teaching us how to offer things first. And he's teaching us how to be clean. So I remember we were meeting him in Montreal, and we had made a whole big jar of gulab jamun. A big jar, this big, filled with gulab jamuns. Mukunda Shamashunda and I were bringing the gulab jamuns to Prabhupada. Well, on the airplane, we were a little hungry. We couldn't eat the airplane food. So it was probably my idea, but I forget. But we came up, let us see if we can eat some of these like Swamiji without touching our lips. Because it was amazing. He would throw it in. At first we had no altar. Vyasa-san. Prabhupada would sit on the altar. Later he told us about a seat for Vyasa representing everything. We didn't bow down. He taught us slowly. We didn't know these things. So he would sit up there on the Vyasa-san and eat without touching his lips. And so when it was a gulab jamun, it was really special because this was like that. So we did that on the way to Canada. And by the time we got to the border, the jar was half empty or half full, depending upon your perspective. This is an intelligence audience, I can tell that. You're laughing at the right places. Very intelligent, thank you. And so, when we got to the border, the customs, they didn't know what this was, this jar full of balls, but they let us through, and then we gave them to Prabhupada. So the same thing, Prabhupada was eating this Bombay chevta without touching his lips, in between, and then he would go writing, he would write, and this reminded me of a story of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The viceroy came from England, from Britain. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kedarnath Datta, was the great magistrate. And everybody else in the court would see the cases, the judges, the magistrates. They would hear the cases and they would be writing things down. But they would maybe see three cases in a day. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was finishing cases in 10 minutes. He would get the gist of it and give his judgment. And so he was able to do what was needed, so many cases on the docket, he would be able to do this faster than everybody else. And so the British viceroy was suspicious about this. And so he went to Kedarnath Datta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house, thinking he would see him just sleeping. And when he snuck up on the house and looked in the window, he saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur writing furiously. Like that. Writing furiously. So, in this way, Prabhupada also did this. He doesn't waste any moment for Krishna. He was always this way. And as I say, full of enthusiasm and letting us have something that we could do. He would find our talents. I was talking about the restaurant before and how this is exciting and something to also let people experience Krishna consciousness. Some people came to Krishna consciousness simply because of the prasadam. They had never experienced anything like this, and they stayed. And so this is how Prabhupada did it. He said, Mr. Lalans, I looked in, peeked in the keyhole, and Prabhupada was writing furiously like that. So like I say, the degree of Krishna conscious Prabhupada, I never saw him deviate. I never saw him. Even when he didn't know I was looking at him in the keyhole, he was still Krishna conscious. And that's how he helped us to be Krishna conscious, by this example, but also by helping us to find how we can relate to Krishna conscious. He would help us along by seeing our talents. Gurudas ji, you know how to photograph? Okay, then you photograph for Krishna. So just like that, even when the world of duality is testing us in our Krishna consciousness, like I say, any act we do that we know is Krishna conscious, chanting, hearing, preaching, everything for Krishna, that this is an extension of Prabhupada. This is our eternal relationship. This is our eternal relationship. And this is how we are able to continue with such ecstasy. It is not difficult if we feel this ecstasy. Otherwise, sometimes, like I say, chanchala. Sometimes Krishna conscious, sometimes not. And we should do it for Radha and Krishna. But even though we are just part and parcel of everything, it doesn't mean that we're not important. Even though we're humble, and even though we do everything, seeing the goodness in every other devotee and trying to help them become Krishna conscious, if we're really Krishna conscious, we will help the other devotees to become Krishna conscious, even seemingly before our own self. But we don't have to neglect ourselves, because that is also counterproductive. It doesn't mean we are great egomaniacs, but it means that we are part and part of everything, and we must at least do the basics of Krishna conscious for ourselves. So, yes, we are not this body, but still, Prabhupada taught us, if there is some health things, take care of it. You know, so we must be intelligent too, and include ourselves in this law of nature, this eternal. A lot of times, humans think that they're not part of nature, that their role is to encroach upon nature, to kill the animals. We don't do that. So, it is also important to do what we can for our own Krishna consciousness. So, if we have some doubts, what do? We talk to our fellow devotees. All the doubts will go away. I remember I had typhoid fever, and the whole room was moving around, and I simply said to one of my godbrothers, is the room moving? And he said, no, and the room stopped moving. It was that simple. So this is the Krishna consciousness that Prahlad Maharaj had experienced. And recently Krishna Chandra sent me a very nice story about a donkey that was in a well. And this donkey fell in the well. And people were trying to get the donkey out of the well, and they couldn't. So then they said, well, it's no use, so we'll just bury the donkey. And they put earth on in the well. And the donkey, being very smart, stepped on the earth. And then they threw more earth, and he stepped on it. And then the donkey was able to step out of the well. And the message is that life will throw dirt on us, but we can step on this dirt and liberate ourselves from this. And how do we do this? We do this with Krishna consciousness. The chanting is cleansing us all the time. This is a cleansing. This is a purification process. And so that's what Prahlad was doing. He was thinking of Radha and Krishna, and he was able to accept this protection. Accept the protection of Lord Nrsimhadev, which is the Lord sending himself for that time and circumstance. And so Radha and Krishna, they will test us sometimes, but still we must persevere. It will not be tougher than we can overcome. It will not be tougher than we can overcome. So this is the verse about Prahlad Maharaj, and I did correlate it to some of Prabhupada's stories. And now if there's any questions, yes, please.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu.
Sure.
My question is that when six of you were in London preaching 1968-69, when you were in London preaching yourself, Shamsundar Prabhu, at that time, there was no devotees there. You went and you started the preaching. In the entire period, not only you survived, but you also preached and got George Harrison, and then you opened a center in London. So my question, I always thought, how did you sustain yourself during that phase? Of course, we know that it was Prabhupada's mercy. But on your part, what did you do to keep yourself highly motivated and highly enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness when you had no association other than four or five of you? Can you please explain that?
Well, there was nothing, seemingly nothing at the time in London. But when people ask, how did you do this? The first thing was we really wanted to please Prabhupada. And when he was there, if he would smile, that was like someone gave you $1 million or whatever anybody might want to wish for. That he was pleased, because sometimes if we didn't do it nicely, he would also tell us, but very nicely. When we first came, he would say, did you bring a receipt? This is in San Francisco. And we say, what's a receipt? You know, he had to teach us all these things, how to get receipts and how to do accounting and how to... So in London, we just decided, because it is the hub of the world, it is like the center of a hub, and so many people are coming to this area, that we would just find what was attractive to them in Krishna consciousness. Just like when Prabhupada went to Butler, Pennsylvania, he went down into the mines, the coal mines, and he heard a preacher there, and the preacher was saying to the miners, if you don't worship God, you'll go to hell. And they said, the miners said, what is hell? And the preacher said, well, hell is deep into the earth, and it's very hot in hell. It's very hot, and it's deep in the earth. And the miners said, that's our working conditions. We go down into that every day. So it doesn't matter. This is not hell to us. This is heaven, so we don't mind going there. So then the preacher said, there's no newspapers in hell, because this is their one form of entertainment. So he found out what they wanted. So we found out what people wanted. And so we went to the Beatles and found out what they wanted. And of course, Krishna conscious, Krishna is all attractive. There is something for everybody. There's something for everybody. So all we did is find out what people wanted and presented it the best we could. And Krishna really did the rest. We just wanted to please Prabhupada. And, you know, when you're young, you can do anything. You believe you can do anything, and you do it. I don't know, is that all right? Or the details are interesting. The details we could talk about sometime. Any other questions? Any comments? Or yes, please.
That was His Grace Shyamasundara Prabhu a few days ago narrating about his first encounter with Krishna consciousness. He was telling us how he was living with Mother Malati in a watchtower in the middle of a forest. And then he said how Mukunda Maharaj came and became completely transformed because he was already in Krishna consciousness. So I wanted to ask, would you share with us your first encounter with Krishna consciousness and the whole group of Shyamasundara Prabhu, Mukunda Swami, and all that first group of devotees?
We were very interested in that time in Eastern philosophy. Anything that came from the East. And I actually, I met Jamuna. And she took me to Shamashunda and Malati's house. And I was with a person who used to be in what they called the Black Panthers. It was a very, it was an organization that was trying to get equal opportunity for Afro-Americans who were being mistreated for years in the United States. They were brought as slaves. And the Native Americans and the Afro-Americans were mistreated for years. And so I was involved in the civil rights movement before becoming a devotee to working with Martin Luther King, etc. And so this was something I was working for, equal treatment for people in the world. So I was somewhat in the mode of goodness and seeing things like that. And I was with somebody who used to be in the Black Panthers, but now he was just, he had a saxophone case. So I said, oh, you playing the saxophone? And he said, no, I'm actually going to people's houses and taking everything they have in their refrigerator and putting it in my saxophone case. So he was with me, and I saw Jamuna, and she put two pieces of incense in a little hole in the wall. And so I liked her very much. And I said to my friend, don't take any food from her refrigerator. You may do this, but don't do it here. So I did that. And then it was Mukunda Maharaj who came. He came from New York. We were all interested, and we were hearing about the Swami. But we were not really doing much of Krishna consciousness until Mukunda Maharaj came and Janaki. So Janaki was Jamuna's sister, and I moved in with Shyamasundara and Malati. But as I say, we were not doing anything so Krishna conscious yet. But when Mukunda Maharaj came, because he had experienced Prabhupada firsthand. And Prabhupada lived with him in the Bowery, in a loft. And because in New York, a storefront temple had opened, and Mukunda was doing the basics of chanting and learning, and we had to learn in the beginning. Prabhupada really spoon-fed us. There were no books, no prayers, no devotees. So basically, he was trying to teach us the concept of we're not this body, and we would chant for, oh, maybe an hour and a half at the time. And then Prabhupada would give very, very simple classes. And there were sometimes crazy people that would come. One person was saying that my child is my God, and I do everything my child says. And Prabhupada said, this is nonsense. You know, and then someone said, well, I feel good when I chant Hare Krishna, but how can I help the rest of the people in the world? And Prabhupada would say, chant loudly. If you feel good, why are you different than everybody else? Chant loudly. So when Mukunda came with this vestige of Krishna consciousness, this earliness, he would be chanting. And they had the temple in New York. So again, we had some hope, something to do, because we were looking for a temple in San Francisco, the second branch, and we found one on Frederick Street. So slowly, slowly, as we did this, and more people came, and a family grew, it proved to me to be this ecstasy. The proof of the puddings and the eating. I had more good experiences hanging out with these people who were basically in the mode of goodness and trying than all the other hippies and beatniks and communes and things that were going on. They were a learning process, a stepping stone to Krishna consciousness. They all helped. There was spirituality involved. But it was this young Krishna conscious family learning together, helping one another. As I say, Mukunda was the one who was guiding us most advanced, but he was learning himself. When Prabhupada came, he didn't ask for anything special. Like I say, he didn't tell us about the Vyasa Son. He didn't tell us about bowing down. We didn't shave our heads at first. It was a year later, maybe, or 6 months. 6 months, he told us about the Brahman thread, things like that. Slowly, slowly, he would bring a slate, a blackboard, and do the Chaitanya prayers. Or then he would do another kind of prayer so that we could learn. Govinda Jai Jai. Tonight I'm going to teach you Govinda Jai Jai. And we would chant it. And there were no mridangas. Prabhupada would play a bongo drum. He would play a bongo drum. Slowly the mridangas came from India. It was like that. So every day something would happen. Then an easy journey to other planets would come, and they would talk on Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's how we got started. Really, Prabhupada, Swamiji spoon-feeding us. He came soon after I became a devotee. And so even the initiation, Janaki got fruit box wood. It's not real wood. It's all pulped together. And she said, I think I'll save some money and buy margarine instead of making ghee for the fire. And so the fire sputtered. And Prabhupada's golden lotus hands would take each piece of fruit box wood and put it in the ghee, and it would sputter. It didn't burn right away. And then it would burn. And he said, this is like Krishna consciousness. It will sputter in the beginning and then burst into flame. And so that's what happened. And, you know, I set up radio programs and did the first photography. I mean, there were some deeds I did that were pretty good and found some important people. But basically, in the early days, we were helping each other, and due to Prabhupada's fathering us so closely, we slowly became Krishna conscious. Possibly. I mean, still trying. Thank you. Any other?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for the very interesting things and very interesting class. About the proof of the existence of God, you gave three answers. We felt ecstatic. Prabhupada said it. Or Gita said it. Now, these are the three answers in front of the favorable people, probably those who knew Prabhupada, who is he? The people who knew Gita, what is Gita? The people who got a chance of being ecstatic, probably they would understand these answers. But how about what could be the other answers in front of those people who are not so favorable and they ask, you know, as rightly Prabhupada said, that the answer depends on the circumstances. Now the circumstance, suppose it is an unfavorable circumstances, like somebody who doesn't believe in God or who doesn't know anything about the religion or about the devotion or about spiritualism, and he, just for sake of debate, he asks, what is the proof of existence of God? What could be the other answers besides these?
Well, I think the best thing is still the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and you can bring this person to a place like this, and they can see people who are trying to live this. And in the light of this world, like an oasis in a desert, if we experience people who are living God consciousness, this may have an effect on us, because, like I say, Krishna is all attractive, and something may spark the fire in this person who wants the proof. That's why association is so important. You can read the Bhagavad Gita, and if you're lucky enough, you can have somebody to be an example. Like Radhanath Maharaj is a good example for us, because he is also God conscious, and he doesn't seem to waver, and he is always encouraging us and always caring for us. And so my feeling is that if someone doesn't want to be God conscious, they can resist this. And if someone wants to argue, even if you have good, cogent, clear, lucid proofs, if they don't want to accept this, they don't. But as people, they may go to the restaurant and feel good there. Or they may talk to a devotee here and feel good by the answer. Or just hearing the holy names. This is such a complete process that there's something for everybody. And this is what I would suggest, again, as the proof of God consciousness, is that how does this resonate with you? We are like radio transmitters, and we can receive the God consciousness or turn the channel off. So let's at least turn the radio on. So if this is somebody you know, bring them here. More?
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. So, yes.
I find always very fascinating when devotees talk about their first experience, the first, very, very first experience when they met Srila Prabhupada. Would you share it with us?
It was like he was floating off the airplane. I didn't see his feet touch the ground. Really, everybody else got off the airplane. We're all waiting. We had two cars with the Hare Krishna mantra painted on the side of the cars. In those days, we painted our cars in San Francisco in the 60s. So we had a Cadillac, and we had the Krishna Lack. We called it the Krishna Lack, all painted Hare Krishna mantra. And so we went to the airport, and we're waiting for Prabhupada, and everybody got off the plane. And I do this now. People in an airplane, they get up as soon as the airplane stops, and then they're waiting in a line, and then they wait, and then finally they go out, and I just sit there, because what's the hurry, and everybody's standing there. So Prabhupada did the same thing. So finally, everybody came out of the airplane. Where's Swamiji? He's supposed to be coming. And he didn't come right after everybody. It was like a little pause, a little drama here, you know? Here comes the divine spiritual master. And he seemed, like I say, to float without touching the ground, like Yudhisthira Maharaj's chariot would not touch the ground because he never lied. Well, this also happened in England. I'll deviate a little because it reminds me of stories and you like that. We were on John Lennon's estate and we were walking and there was high grass and it was wet and Prabhupada was the only one intelligent enough to wear rubber Wellington boots. And again, it seemed like his feet weren't touching the ground. But I saw a little worm coming towards Prabhupada's feet. And Prabhupada was in the front, and we were like walking behind him. And he was in the front. And the worm was coming towards Prabhupada's feet. And I thought, I better tell Prabhupada that this worm is there because he's going to step on the worm. But then I thought, who am I to intercede? This is Krishna conscious. Maybe the worm will be liberated. It's like falling under the wheels of the Jagannath car. My mind was going through all these machinations. But then I said, well, I should save the worm. And I was about to say it. And then the worm and Prabhupada's feet met. And then the worm went on and Prabhupada went on. And I looked and I saw our footprints in the grass. But I didn't see footprints for Prabhupada. So when he came off the airplane, it was like that. He seemed to glide into the terminal. And then he sat down, and he sat down like a bird in a nest. It was like this graceful swan, even sitting. And then he took out the kartals, and he just wrapped them 2.5 times. And he played, and then people in the airport came around. And we chanted, and he smiled on us like an ocean, all of us. He smiled. And just then, an airport official was coming over to say, this can't happen in the airport. And just before he came over, Prabhupada didn't even see him, but he just stopped at that point. And the man was like, "What? I can't do this now." And there were people around. And then Mukunda Maharaj came over, and Prabhupada took him to the Krishna Lack. But Mukunda embraced Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't tell us about bowing down. And so that's the way it was. And Prabhupada just embraced Mukunda. You know, that's what these boys and girls know at this time. So he didn't ask for this honorific treatment for himself. We wouldn't have done it because we were all rebels and hippies and beatniks and wild men and women, really. And so slowly, like I say, he spoon-fed us and would give us a prayer and give us this idea of we're not this body. We went to a program at the YMCA and he said, who's the most intelligent? They're young children. And I said, Prabhupada, these are very young children. I mean, Swamiji, you have to give a simple lecture. And he said, who's the most intelligent? And this young boy said, and he said to the boy, what's this? And the boy said, my head. And what is this? My elbow. And then he said, but where are you? And the intelligent boy didn't know what to say. And so he proceeded to explain about the soul fueling the body. And he was teaching the people, you're not this body. And he continued to teach this years later because we still don't get it. But I'm not saying to do this again in an artificial way that, oh yeah, we're not the Goswamis where sores are coming from our body. We should at least take care of them. Because then we can give Krishna consciousness to others. If we're suffering and we're in pain, then it's counterproductive to our giving Krishna consciousness to others. So as part of the equation, we take care of ourselves as well as help our God brothers and God sisters to become Krishna conscious. And it's nice to be back here. This is a very wonderful place. Thank you very much.
Jai.